Blog Talk Radio.
The following wrestling broadcast is performed by highly trained professional athletes. It is not recommended that their actions be imitated in any form whatsoever in the home. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour with your host, Frank Namoli, and wrestling's masked cowboy, the Maverick.
All right, it's Friday night. You know what that means. It is your weekly dose of retro wrestling. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Show. I am your host, Frank Namoli. And as always, by my side, my ever faithful compadre, wrestling's only masked cowboy, the Maverick.
And a hearty blah blah to you too.
Got a little tongue tied there.
Yeah, so I noticed. That's all right. It happens to the best of us and, well, the rest of us.
How are you, fam?
I am good. I am good. Looking forward to tonight's show. You know, interesting subject. Because basically it's something every single human being can relate to. We have them. We may not like them, but we always got to deal with them. And that's families. We are going to talk wrestling families tonight.
I was a deer all over the place. I was a test tube orphan baby. I don't know what you're talking about.
If anyone cares, I can share some texts from my good friend when he goes to family functions. That alone is a weekly episodic episode.
A weekly episodic episode.
There you go. But yeah, you know, when I was thinking of this, it was kind of one of them subjects that you breach and you're like, man, is there enough to fill an entire show? But then when you get into it, there is more than enough, and there's some interesting angles to go at it. You know, you can just go straight and talk about, you know, hey, this one has a great family, that one, or you could even go, how about, you know, maybe this one wasn't that great, or vice, you know, there's just so many ways you can go with this. And it was really fun for me to do the research on a lot of this.
It was interesting when you first broached the subject, you said, hey, let's talk wrestling families. My knee-jerk reaction was like, I don't want to talk about the Von Erichs and the Harts for a whole hour. It's not going to be enough. But, you know, I really shorted the subject and, you know, in looking, there are so many families and types of wrestling families. And, you know, it's really, you know, a multi-generational aspect of wrestling is always one of the more interesting things. And it's honestly something I think that they don't play enough on. It used to be, in a lot of cases, where you were a second-generation wrestler, that was your pedigree. You would come in, and that would be a big part of who you were. And, you know, sometimes that worked out really, really well. Sometimes it ended up haunting you, and you talked briefly about it earlier, and I'm sure we'll cover it later. But, you know, nowadays it doesn't seem like sometimes it seems like they hide their family lineages sometimes. And I never understood that. Like, for every Randy Orton who embraces his family history, you get a Michael McGillicuddy. And you don't understand what the thought process was behind something like that, or at Tamina, you know, where they do their best to try to avoid the family link. And I guess Tamina is not a good example, but like what they did with Mr. Perfect's kid, Michael McGillicuddy, who's now Curtis Axel, a little more playing into his family's role. But I think what hurt that kid overall and why he'll never ever be a success is the Michael McGillicuddy handle they put on him.
You know what? And I agree with you 100%. I never understood that. I was like, why were they calling? And the kid's got talent.
Absolutely.
It's not like he came in with nothing. It was like, well, we're going to call him, you know, Michael McGillicuddy in honor of his mother. Well, no one knew who his mother was.
Exactly.
And then it's like he left and he came in as Curtis Axel, but yet they will still tell you he's the son of Mr. Perfect.
Right. And the name, when they gave him the name, and I think Paul Heyman was the one who rechristened him Curtis Axel, he was paying tribute to his father and his grandfather, which is great. That should have been him from the start. Mm-hmm. And now, unfortunately, he's stuck in the social outcast. He's not even wearing tights anymore. You can see he's pretty much just given up. He's just counting down the days till he gets released. He's probably stockpiling his money. You know, there's no effort in anything he does anymore. And it's a shame because they literally sucked the life out of the kid.
Yeah, yeah, they really did. And you know what? You touched on something. And actually, when you touched on it, it just hit me. You said it best. Years ago, being a second-generation wrestler was a good ticket. And now it's not a guarantee of anything. I mean,
well,
there's
never was
so
always
many
a guarantee. It wasn't always a guarantee, but it was a pedigree. It was something that got you in the door and got you looked at, got you interest. When you think of this is, you know, the son, Dustin Rhodes, the son of Dusty Rhodes is making his debut. You're like, oh, let's take a look and see what he does. And sometimes in his case, it worked out. Mixed blessings, and eventually he found his way. But, you know, there's always a guy who had to live up to enormous shoes and could never fill them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you'd be surprised on how many second-generation sons and daughters there are out there right now that have the pedigrees, have the talent, but, you know, they're just not getting the instant boom that used to come with that.
Yeah, and sometimes sometimes it depends on the level of success, too, because sometimes, you know, I said it right before we went on the air, I once heard Jim Ross say that if Greg Gagne went anywhere else and wrestled as anyone other than Greg Gagne, he probably would have had a much bigger career because the kid was really talented, he had a lot going on, but he was always looked at as he's not Vern.
And, you know, Gagne could put on heck of a matches. He cut very nice promos. So you're definitely onto something, you know. And, you know, sometimes, like we said, you know, maybe being a second generation was a detriment to some of these guys. And we're definitely going to get into that. And we're going to get into just the families overall and the bloodlines. And it's just funny to look at some who've had enormous success and some who just couldn't get out of the gate. And so it's a bigger topic than I originally thought we were going to touch on. And I'm actually glad that we decided to go with this tonight.
Because it was your topic. You're always glad when we go with your topic.
Well, we'll go with your topic next week.
I don't have a topic. That's why we went with yours.
Oh, we'll get one by next week.
All right.
Have it on my desk in triplicate. Now I need to buy a desk. Damn.
All right. See, look what you've gone and done. You know they're not going to put a desk in the budget.
Oh, Bay will put a desk in the budget. If he knows what's good for him, he'll put a desk. By the way, big shout out to our man, Bay Ragney, Totally Driven Radio. Representing the Totally Driven Network at the Atlantic City Comic Convention all weekend. So if any of our listeners are out there, stop by the Totally Driven table, see Mr. Ragney. He's also got his wonderful daughter, Rita, out there, who is a heck of an artist selling her artwork. From the report I got, she had a good first day, which is always good. You know, when a young up-and-comer artist gets their stuff out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen her stuff. She does fantastic work. Stop down and tell Bay that you need more Maverick on the Totally Driven Network. And, you know, tell him to stop mooching off his daughter because she's the star in the family.
Oh. So do you think every time she sells a picture, he hands out a Chubby Dudley pic?
That's why she looks at some more pictures. first autograph picture. But Joby Dudley with every photo she sells.
Why did I just get a picture of him pulling the Virgil?
I was Joby. That's a great picture, honey. I'll buy one. You want a signed autograph from Joby Dudley? No, thank you. Leave me alone.
LonelyVirgil.com.
It really exists.
It does.
I wonder if he's there.
All right.
If he's there, we should go tell Beta to come on the show. I want to talk to Virgil.
No, Virgil's nasty. He's hostile. He almost ripped Shane Golden's head off.
Well, he probably had it coming.
Well, that's beside the point. All right. So why don't we pay some bills real quick, and when we come back, you and I are going to talk a little wrestling families. See you in three.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
All right, we are back after paying a few bills. We paid bills. That's right. And we are talking wrestling families. Interesting subject. Because basically, as we said in the first half of the show, a family can make or break you in the wrestling business. I'm sorry?
In some instances, it can.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you that's a nice segue. Let's look at David Sammartino.
No one heard that segue. We were all... I gave you that segue in the first segment, and you didn't take it. I talked about it during the break, and now you're going to take the segue?
Yeah. We got to keep our listeners guessing.
And this is why we have 11 listeners, and most of them are me.
No. We are very popular in Israel. Big shout out to our Israeli fan base.
What's up, Israel?
We got
Delco represented too. I run into people all the time, and they're like, "Hey, you look like that dude from the radio." I'm like, "Yeah, that's me." They're like, "Why are you wearing the mask?" All right, no.
On air.
Sorry. On the air. I do wear the mask on the air. I've proven it before. I've posted pictures of me wearing it. I am a method wrestler. I'm a method podcaster.
Yeah. Plus, I think we're popular out in Chester.
Who's he?
No, Chester, the city.
No.
9 out of 10 police stations have us on. But getting back to Mr. Sammartino, here was one that I found to be a really interesting case, because he was a guy that, you know, when it was announced that Bruno had a son, man, the people were going nuts because, you know, this was a chance for the Bruno legacy to carry on. And even though his name was David, they saw, when he first came out, he was known as Bruno Sammartino Jr. He had the look of his father, the little burliness, wrestled just like his father. But honestly, I think being a Sammartino held him back. I honestly think it just stifled him because he had to live up to such a big shoes that it was never going to happen.
Yeah, there was almost no way he was going to even come close to Bruno. Even if he had, you know, a huge career and a world title and all that, he never was going to be. And I don't know. I've never seen, not everything I've seen of David Sammartino, I always kind of thought, eh. Of course, a lot of what I saw was early David with Bruno by his side. You know, WrestleMania 1 and prior to that. I don't know how. I know he continued for a while. He went to Herb Abrams' UWF. Was it Herb Abrams' UWF he was in?
Yeah.
The second UWF? Yeah, he was in that for a while.
He was also in AWA, WCW.
Yeah, well, yeah, he did all of that. And I never really followed much to garner opinion, but, you know, it's interesting because it doesn't really matter what he did. He was almost destined to fail.
Yeah, and it's the truth. He just – the problem was is, you know, they wanted David Bruno, but in the 80s. And it was just far past the era of Bruno. And if they had let the kid maybe – do something different or do his own thing, I think he may have won a lot farther than he did than he did. I just think he was one of them guys that was, and another guy I always put in that same vein was Scott Putski.
Yeah,
it's like they wanted them to be their fathers, and if they had let them just be them, you know, I think they both would have probably did a lot more than what went on in their wrestling careers.
And that was definitely the case in some instances where they tried to be a mirror of their father, and it didn't always work out. When you look at I'm sure he's on one of our lists, but the best case example of that would be Dustin Rhodes.
Perfect example.
You know, he started out pretty...
Yeah, you're right. He started out being his father.
They put him in the cowboy boots and the vest, and they brought him out there as pretty much Dusty Rhodes Jr., the bleached blonde hair. You know, he came out there as a young version, and he had mixed success. He did okay. He was a mid-card, a good mid-card talent, and I actually enjoyed a lot of what he did in WCW for a while, but it wasn't until he went and became Goldust that he was able to establish his own career. Ironically, overshadowing anything else he would ever do for the rest of his career would be, well, why don't you just go be Goldust?
But it worked.
Oh, yeah.
And it was again, like we said, he just went outside the box, did something totally away from his father. Now, and this kind of brings me back to the McGillicuddy thing. Even though he was doing a different gimmick, they still acknowledged that he was Dustin Rhodes. And I just don't understand, like, why that became taboo at some point.
Well, WWE never on air really established that he was at first. You know, the first in the beginning, they never really established that it was Dustin Rhodes. It was later when he became, you know, when they started to take some of the weirdness off the character because he had gotten so weird that they started to bring it home. Yeah, I don't know. The Michael McGillicuddy thing baffled me. Was it Deuce and Domino? One of them was Jimmy
Snuka's
kid.
Yeah.
They dressed him up like in the strangest idea they had in a long time. They dressed him up like a character from Grease and put him out there, you know, when he had that pedigree. And, you know, sometimes it's really detrimental. Sometimes you want to break out on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But those are two instances where it really didn't work at all. And I think part of it is the booking. I mean, Michael McGillicuddy, and I don't know, I think he was Domino, isn't going to make you a ton of money. But, you know, for every gold dust, there's a, you know, an epic failure to follow through. Because you look at Ted DiBiase's boy. He came out as Ted DiBiase. They put his father book it and then just kind of dropped the ball around him.
Which, again, amazed me because he was another amazing talent.
I loved him. I thought he was awesome, and I think they tried to make him too much like his father. Whereas I had this one process, one storyline in the back of my head that I thought they should have ran with is because you had an instance where at this time when they brought in the Evolution Legacy, which I thought was a great idea for a faction, it just didn't quite gel like
also.
It should have. I thought it was brilliant. One of the things I thought is Ted DiBiase Jr. had a babyface charisma about him to me. I always thought it, and he, when he turned and he started doing the parking lot parties and stuff like that, where he was tailgating mm-hmm. with guys, and he was just kind of being a down-home kind of family, redneck kind of guy. I always thought it would be interesting if they did a feud with Cody Rhodes, who is actually the opposite of his father, a natural heel, and where they just mixed things up a bit. You had Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man's son, this evil, evil guy, and his good guy son, against Cody Rhodes, who's the son of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, you know, one of the biggest baby faces of all times. And those two guys had feuded each other. But what if they switched kids during the feud? Where the father's got involved on the other end of it. Because you have, you know, he's like, you know, it's kind of the ultimate father-son brawl in a mixed-up way. But they never actually got the two of the fathers involved in the legacy thing. And it just kind of petered out. When I thought it could have just been a very interesting and unique kind of feud where, you know, DiBiase sides with Cody and Dusty comes in and backs up Teddy Jr.
Yeah. That is a good idea. Yeah, Legacy was something that I didn't understand how they dropped the ball on that. That was almost like the hand-me-down for the next generation, and they just totally, you know, because it looked like it was gaining some steam because it was Cody, Ted, and Afa Jr. And then he failed his drug test. And then it just seemed like they lost interest in the whole thing. Because for a while it looked like they were going to be teaming up with Randy Orton, which I thought was brilliant.
Right. Him being the leader of a second generation faction of guys who were kind of, especially you can do the thing where they were buck, especially because at the time Randy was being the legend killer. And you could literally have these kids, you know, playing off of, you know, almost like a Kingdom Come situation. I know I'm referring to a comic book where this, the next generation of these superstars, their kids are obnoxious, spoiled brats, you know, and you could have done some really interesting storylines where these guys were coming out to ruin the legacy of their parents.
Hey, 100% agree. And they just couldn't run with it.
Or didn't, for whatever reason.
Or didn't, yeah. I don't know. It's a shame. But, well, why don't we start talking about some of the families that, you know, we got on our list. So, as always, I let you start. Go ahead.
My first pick this week is one that it kind of gets overlooked in the family wrestling legacies. And part of that is because so many of them made names for themselves bucking the family trend. We talked about how sometimes, you know, with Greg Gagne, if he was somebody else, well, this is a guy who early on in his career, this family, you know, decided to do that. And I'm talking about Blackjack Mulligan and Barry Windham and Kenda Windham. Barry decided he wasn't going to be Blackjack Mulligan Jr. He just becomes Barry Windham and makes a huge name for himself. Ironically, his younger brother Kendall comes along and decides he's going to ride the Windham name and probably should have been a Mulligan, pun intended. And, you know, and then, of course, what makes this family interesting to me is the fact that, you know, Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo become a tag team. Mike Rotundo marries into the family. And now you have his sons, who in the WWE now are Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas. And it's just an interesting family to me because you don't, it's not like a branded family. You know, they all have a trademark. Like there's a trademark that I think Bo no longer does, but he early on he did. They all wore the Mulligan black glove. Barry would wear the black glove for most of his career. Even Bray Wyatt now, if you watch, he wears an amended version of the Mulligan black glove to the ring, and Bo Dallas wore a white one when he for a while too. And that was like the only little family trait that they had for a long time. But to me, this it's a great family of performers, and they all kind of stood out on their own as opposed to working as a family unit in the traditional sense, as a wrestling family would. And I'm big fans of so many of them. I love Bray Wyatt and what he did. I think Bo Dallas is one of the most underrated guys they have. I'm a huge Barry Windham fan and Mike Rotundo and all his different characters that he portrayed over his years. And of course, Big Blackjack himself. To me, they're one of my favorite wrestling families, but I didn't realize it until I really started looking into the family aspect of it because it's not one that they necessarily wear on their sleeve.
You know what? I can't agree with you more on that. And I always found that family interesting because they are probably the only family on our list that bled on over into the in-laws, if you will. You know, because Rotundo married into the family, which still kept a great wrestling lineage going with his kids.
Yeah, they
now,
definitely honored.
Go ahead.
They definitely both honored the Blackjack Mulligan traditions, and they you know they definitely looked up to him as a huge influence on their careers.
Yeah, and what I like I said found interesting is you know of course it has to do. Their father was phenomenal. I mean, Mike Rotundo, we can't shortchange him on anything.
Never. But, one of my all-time favorite utility guys.
Then you look at who your uncle is and Barry and who your grandfather is. So literally those two boys probably had one of the best wrestling upbringings of anyone on our list.
Yeah, as long as Uncle Kendall wasn't invited to dinner, it was good talking that night.
And Uncle Kendall wasn't bad. He just suffered from I didn't have any weight-itis.
He was a rail of a man.
Until the end of his career when he became a whale of a man.
when he showed up in the was it the South Texas Redneck faction? He showed up briefly.
Yes, looking like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
After a weekend vendor at Baskin Robbins.
There you go. Is there such a thing? No.
We'd lose you forever.
Sure. Thanks to me, Baskin Robbins is now down to 4 flavors. Well, now, the first family on my list, I put on here for one simple reason. You always get one good member of the family, but it's very rarely that you get two that match, that actually equal the level of the of each other. And I'm talking about the Funks. Terry and Glory Funk, who I'm pretty sure that they are the only brothers ever to win the heavyweight championship.
And the NWA championship, because only one Briscoe did.
Yes.
You could very well be correct. Nothing is coming to mind. And that's honestly a team on my list as well.
Okay.
Glory and Terry Funk. So we can definitely jump in on and keep talking. Go ahead and give your lineage there.
Well, everyone knows their father was a wrestler and promoter, Dory Funk Sr., very successful. He basically trained his boys. And you know what? History took over. Neither of them dropped the ball. And it's funny, what Dory lacked in charisma, he more than made up for in his wrestling ability. And what Terry lacked in his wrestling ability, he more than made up for in charisma. So it was almost like they complemented each other.
I agree to a certain extent, because I think Terry was very underrated as far as his wrestling ability goes, because he was the wild guy. You know, he played the wild man for so long, and he was known for his brawling, but he was one hell of a technical wrestler. He didn't have the upfront charisma of Terry, but he had a way about him. He was that strong, silent, lone cowboy standing in the, you know, coming into town kind of thing. He had that going for him. You know, he seemed, even when he was a young man, he seemed like an old, grizzled veteran. He just had that presence about him. And while he didn't ooze charisma, he had a confidence about him that more than made up for it.
Yeah, he was a very, I don't even know the way to put it, but maybe you hit it on the head. He was just that, you could see him walking off the plains of a Western movie.
Yeah,
you know,
he's the character.
He had that presence.
He's a character, almost like a Clint Eastwood type character. He came into town, he didn't say a lot, but he backed it up with his actions. And he had that kind of cool confidence about him.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like I said, with and then, you know, again, it comes down to their father, who was a very successful promoter, very successful wrestler, never reached the status that his sons did. But, you know, it all came down to pedigree.
And yeah, absolutely. Honestly, you know, being my age, most of what I know about the father is from what the sons would talk about in interviews.
But you definitely you don't hear too much about Dory Funk, and unfortunately, I never seen any footage of him, so I really can't tell you much beyond what you know.
Yeah, exactly.
His
sons would talk about.
Any man that could raise 2 world champions, you gotta give him his props.
Now, did Dory have any children? I know Terry had daughters. It was very publicly known that he had daughters, and none of them went into the family business. Dory ever have any kids, do we know of?
Not that I know of. I'm looking that up now. I know he has a very mean wife.
Very mean wife?
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't cross her. Yes, Dory Funk had three children. Dory Funk III, Adam Dirk Funk. Wow, that's a hard... What did that kid do to deserve that? And Penny Funk.
Yes. All right.
So he had two sons and a daughter. And he had five grandchildren.
And none of them got into the family business. It's very interesting.
Here's the interesting part. Dory Funk III went into medicine. And he is a very successful doctor. Ah, but here's it is. His grandson, Dory Funk IV, is training to be a wrestler under Dory Jr.
So the family line in wrestling may not be done. And that was what I was curious, because I knew they both, nobody ever, you never hear about the next generation of Funks, and that's something that'll, but how about that? Another Funk in the waiting in the wings, possibly.
And if we know our buddy Vince McMahon, they'll probably be...
Depends on whether he's mad at Terry or not.
I thought he liked Terry.
This week. Yeah, he's always back and forth on Terry Funk.
Well,
and of course, you know, I would definitely be remiss talking about the Funk family, you know, without bringing up the most infamous member of the Funk family. You know, I mentioned him, maybe this is the second time we're mentioning this guy on the show, but we got to bring him up. We got to talk about Jimmy Jack Funk.
You know, the way that poor kid was treated. You know, it was almost like he wasn't even a member of the family.
Yeah, definitely the the black sheep of the Funk family. It's almost like they treated him like he was adopted or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And all because he wore a very nice mask.
That's why you liked him.
That's why I liked him.
But yeah,
Jimmy Jack
remiss.
Funk.
Good old Jimmy Jack.
Good old Jimmy Jack. And I did just post the Jimmy Jack Funk video up there for giggles. The funny thing about the Jimmy Jack tying into, I never met him, but you know, when we decided we were doing they put us together as a tag team. I decided to put the mask on to complement the tag team, and I was emailing all these mask makers. And it was hilarious how many people had no idea what I was talking about. I'm like, I need a mask like Jimmy Jack Funk wears. And they're like, what? Who? What? I don't know how to do that. I actually had to go outside the wrestling mask makers to get my mask. But I tried. I'm like, this is Jimmy Jack Funk. How do you make a mask? And I'm like, Repo Man. He wore one too. But, you know, definitely a one of a kind was Jimmy Jack. And
An S&M mask maker?
No, I didn't go to one. What ended up happening was when you start looking for, I tell the story, I was Googling, once all the wrestling mask makers shot me down, I started trying to figure out how to look for a mask like this, to a good one, not like a Halloween store mask that was going to rip off. I wanted something solid. So I Googled, you know, Robin's mask and stuff like that, and what kept coming up were all these weird S&M sites that made these kinky leather masks. And it was just like, what is going on in the world that I am unaware of? That, you know, there was like Catwoman and Robin masks so you can live out your greatest comic fantasies. And I was like, it's a teenage boy. Knock it off.
Hey, sexy Sadie the mask maker.
Yeah, Sexy Sadie the Mask Maker was, and I actually, you have that mask.
Yes, I have Sexy Sadie the Mask Maker.
Because I gave it to you to hold on to, and you're still holding on to Sexy Sadie's mask.
Yes.
But the one I wear now to the ring, the leather one, it was from a theatrical mask maker. And unfortunately, he's gone, and I'm going to need a new one if I'm going to continue down the wrestling path. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do there.
You're still doing that?
No, I'm done.
Oh, okay.
It's never more wrestling again. It's for the birds.
But, yes, that was next on my list, the Funks.
Speaking of being done in the wrestling business, why did you quit your job at Liberty All-Star Wrestling this week?
Why did I what?
Why did you quit your job at Liberty All-Star Wrestling this week?
I quit my job.
Uh-huh.
No, as far as I know, I still own the company.
Hold on, I will show you. I will show you, world. Do, 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 do. It's gone. Oh, no, there it is. Hold on. Let me get a screen capture here. On your Facebook wall. and I saw this earlier, and I tried to comment on it, there was an error commenting. But in case you're wondering, Frank apparently is no longer the owner of Liberty All-Star Wrestling because he left his job there, according to Facebook.
I am confused as a mofo. Now I'm on my Facebook page and...
This is what we take a left turn in the middle of our show.
Well, I'll be damned. I was ousted.
There must have been a coup that we didn't know about. Is Bay back in charge?
Oh, even worse. Wyndham James Winthorpe was on my page.
He was on your page?
He may have... Because you know he won Elite. He's the now the owner of Elite Wrestling.
That's why it's going downhill rapidly.
He may have snuck on my page and took over Liberty.
I just thought that was weird. Anyway, back to the show.
I just fixed it. All right. There
so, yeah, Funk Brothers for me as well. I went in. I even covered Jimmy Jack. So that was technically my second pick of the week.
Okay.
So give us another one.
Okay, well, if we're going to go back to me, a family that I've always found interesting. And I thought that the whole family is talented, if not controversial. The Colognes.
Ooh. They were close to being on my list.
And I'll tell you why they made my list. Carlos Colon was an international superstar. No denying that.
Huge star in Puerto Rico.
He actually had... a run with the NWA belt, which the NWA never acknowledged, which I always found funny.
You know, he's one of those phantom champions.
Yes. And
there's a handful of those.
Well, the reasoning for him actually made more sense than any. It was because they wanted Flair to get out of the country alive.
Which, you know. Absolutely.
Which, as one wrestler can attest, is a hard thing to do. But I went there. But the Colognes made my list because all three of his sons, I think, are phenomenal wrestlers. And I just think that they're kind of in that same situation where they're held back just because the creative, it's that Ted DiBiase, creative doesn't know what to do with them. And I know it led to a lot of frustration with Carlito, which, you know, led to him actually leaving the WWF.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Epico and Primo, I thought they were a very good tag team. I thought what they had Rosa with them for a while, which gave them a certain appeal, but she disappeared almost as quickly as she showed up. And, you know, they floundered for a while. They really didn't give them a lot of storylines. Of course, then they repackaged them as the Bullfighters, which to me is the ultimate, you know, face palm to yourself. I mean, you have a gimmick that you're like, let's take Tito Santana, one of the greatest intercontinental titles, one of the greatest wrestlers of all times, and we need to freshen him up because he's at the tail end of his career. We need something interesting to do with him. So let's make him a bullfighter. And then they were surprised that it tanked hard. And then, you know, 30 years later, they're like, we have this tag team and we're not sure what to do with them. Well, let's make them bullfighters.
And give them a mini ball.
But they're not Mexican. That's fine. We'll give them a little bull luchador. Which, honestly, I thought El Torito was the best part of that whole act. I loved the midget bull. I thought it was hilarious. Very sad that him and Hornswoggle are gone, so they can't rekindle that feud for the 400th time. Hornswoggle was bound to get a win.
My favorite is still the WLC match.
That was hilarious.
Complete with mini announcers, mini refs.
And there was no reason you couldn't just repackage him and make him Kalisto's twin brother. I mean, they're the same size.
Now, it's funny because they're repackaging them again. I honestly don't understand what the gimmick is. They're two guys that just hang around Puerto Rico and pick up women.
Right. I don't know if they're going – they haven't really established that they're Epico and Primo again. I don't know if they're going to come out with completely different names.
No.
But at least they have the – they're the Shining Stars. I think they refer to them as the Shining Stars recently on television. Yeah, the Shining Stars of Puerto Rico will be here next week, I think, is the last thing I heard. So I guess that's what it's going to be. And it's one of those things that it's like it kind of depends on what they do with it, because I get the same feeling as the New Day. Like when they packaged the New Day together and they did the gospel thing, and I was like, okay, this is going to be great when they eventually turn heel. You know, like you knew it was going to come off to a rough start, but I'm really curious to see where this is going to come out, how it's going to play out, but I just don't have a lot of faith in it because there's not a lot to it. Other than we're Puerto Rican and it's beautiful, I don't know how they're going to present it when it comes out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't even understand the whole, hey, this is Puerto Rico. We have food. We have women. We have beaches. What does that have to do with wrestling? We have food, we have women, we have beaches. It has nothing to do with wrestling. All right, you guys are going to fit right in. Let's go. Yeah, I'm really interested to see that. But like I said, I had to put them on the list just because, especially Epico and Primo, them two are the ultimate team players because no matter what they give them or ask them to do, they're there. And they really do have the talent to back it up.
Yeah, definitely. And they've pretty much got thrown a lot of crap, and they've been dealing with it well, a lot better than Carlito did, who took his ball and went home. And Carlito, I agree with you, he was really talented and could have gone a long way. The irony is they're like, hey, let's we have him coming in. What are we going to do with him? And he's like, well, let's make him Razor Ramon. And they're like, why? Because he's actually Puerto Rican, unlike the last one. And they're like, oh, all right. Cool. So, that's kind of where the conversation around Carlito seems to have gone. He did a lot of the same stuff that Razor Ramon did on his promos coming in. And he put in a lot of good time, a lot of good matches, but you could just see after a while that he was phoning it in. And then when you heard that he wanted to leave and he was miserable, you're like, ah, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And of course, there was his father's – he did return for his father's induction into the WWE Hall of Fame, and he handled it with all the grace and dignity that he could muster.
You know what? That couldn't have went better. The fact that they decided they were going to cut Carlos Colon short because Mr. T ran over.
Right. But it's like, yes, we're going to get an angry tirade.
And Carlito did not disappoint because he come right out of the bullet guns, right out of the shoot guns a-blazing. Yep, this is a WWE show. The Carlitos are getting cut short, and he just get exact wording, but I was like, yes.
Right. Meanwhile, Epico and Primo are slithering in their shoes behind them because they're trying to keep their jobs. They're like, we don't know him. He just showed up. He's not part of the family.
Yeah, he's a Guerrero.
He's a Guerrero, yeah. He's a bullfighter. We don't know him.
Yeah, get away from us, invader.
Yeah. But, yeah, Carlos Colon feuded. I remember the only thing I knew about Carlos Colon was that he had an epic feud with Abdullah the Butcher. And that alone, like when I first started following wrestling, all I ever heard was about him and Abdullah the Butcher. And that alone for me was like, okay, that is seriously dude, I never, ever want to meet in a dark alley. If he can survive a feud with Abdullah the Butcher.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially early on, before that's all you heard. Yeah. This is the guy who feuded all over Puerto Rico with Abdullah, and you knew nothing about either of them other than Abdullah's reputation. And it was just like, whoa, that guy's got to be tough because he's this little man, and he fights Abdullah all over the place.
And he was also known for one epic thing, being that youngster at the Royal Rumble.
Youngster in his one and only, yes. The Gorilla Monsoon referred to him as a youngster in his one and only Royal Rumble appearance.
That's next on my list, the Colognes. So who you got, buddy?
Well, that's a very interesting pick. I have to agree. My next pick, it's one that's getting a lot of publicity and press right now, but for many years it wasn't one of the more high-profile families. Although they had a long, proud history, and apparently I'm starting to think it's a rib. But my next is the Samoan Dynasty, as it's now called. The Inouye family being the centerpiece of that. Your Afa and your Sika, your Fatu, your Uso brothers, your Umaga, Rikishi, and of course the kid in the family who made good and put that family on the map as being the wrestling family, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock.
Don't forget Yokozuna.
Yokozuna, yeah, I definitely have to add Yokozuna to that list as well. I just kind of
raised him. Jamal?
Right, there was tons of them. And
you
to
know
the point
what?
Where it's like, it becomes a rib because at some point they're like, yeah, anybody who's got any kind of island heritage, because then they're like, oh, yeah, Jimmy Snuka's related to us too. And Tamina, yeah, she's related to us. Yeah, and Epico and Primo, yeah, they're not really bullfighters. They're Samoans.
Yeah,
I'm starting to think it's a rib.
I had them actually high on my list for the simple fact is, you know, that they were a super successful family. And, I mean, a lot of times the only time they don't succeed is because of their own demons or misgivings or egos, because this is a family. Usually when a new member comes in, they got star written all over them.
Yeah, this they would have made my list even without the Rock, you know, just on the fact of the Wild Samoans and then Afa and Sika and then Jimmy and Jey Uso. You know, that is an awesome lineage of Samoan tag teams right there. Three generations. It's something that WWE didn't play up at first, and it used to make me angry that they didn't play up the importance of, you know, the Usos being the third generation WWF tag team champions, even. You know, all three Samoan tag teams, and then to add into the mix your Umagas, your, you know, the Yokozunas and the Rocks and all those, you know, definitely rounded out the family and made it a much bigger thing. And now they're kind of like stepping up and going, yeah, we're the Samoan dynasty is how they've been referred to, which I think is great.
Yeah, because you look, three world champions, you know, Yokozuna, Roman Reigns, and The Rock.
And The Rock, right, yeah, that's something to really be proud of coming in later. And, you know,
don't forget, it goes all the way back to High Chief Peter Maivia.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I should have mentioned him almost first. And the thing is, it's interesting because they are a tight family, and the one thing about the Wyndham Rotundo families, they were all different. These guys are all very proud of their heritage. You know, with the exception of Yokozuna,
yes,
who was packaged as something else. Not that he didn't have that Samoan pride. Pretty much all of them, for a good part of their career, of course, you know, ran with that Samoan heritage as a big part of their – and it's one of the things that they ignored with Roman Reigns in the beginning. And then when they needed to add some depth to his character, they started to pull back and be like, yeah, this guy's got this island heritage and he's proud of it. You know, it makes him a little more interesting as opposed to just this guy who stands there looking like a doof and then running people over. But yeah, it's also they have a very proud lineage, which makes them one of the more interesting families to me, because they're tight.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of – some of these families, there's a lot of internal craziness and, you know – insanity and infighting and stuff like that. But with the Samoan family, you very rarely hear of any of that. They're very dirty laundry. They don't air it in public.
No, they don't. And the other thing is they always support each other. Like, you know, they don't have a problem coming in and helping out. You know, as you've seen with The Rock coming in and giving a rub to his cousin Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
So you definitely you got that. And I'm sorry if I sounded distracted because I was actually trying to look up some info. Even if you look at the latest entry, and I'm trying to, for some reason, I've seen her 100 times and now her name escapes me. The newest Samoan who is in NXT now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about her completely. She's the next one coming up.
And she is got all the tools. I mean, she's a big girl. I wouldn't want to meet her in a dark alley. And for some reason, her name is just escaping me for some reason.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I heard there's a family member down in NXT.
Nia Jax, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, Nia Jax is the female. And, again, she's coming in like a house of fire. If they had half a brain, they would pair her with her cousin Tamina.
Right.
And literally, those two would be the unstoppable force. Like, I don't get that whole why they don't do more with Tamina. It's not like she can't work or hold her own.
I never understood what anything they have done with it. Like, at one point, I was like, okay, they're finally starting to figure Tamina out because she started coming to the ring with the cheetah print pants and doing a little more of her heritage. You know, they've always kind of pushed her away from
the splash.
Right. Pushing her farther and farther away from her lineage, and she's somebody who desperately needs something. You know, she's so desperate for years. She's never connected in any way, and why not just let her embrace her heritage? Even if you don't want to play into the snooker thing, which I understand, especially right now, it's not a good idea to be a snooker. But you know, you don't have to say that. You can just play into part of the dynasty and that lineage. And you know, she's the first, to my knowledge, the first of that family to be a woman wrestler. And they should have really played that up with her.
Yeah. It's, like you said, man, it's just kind of like one of them things. They just don't want to play it up for some reason or another. And I, for the life of me, can't figure it out.
So, but that whole family, man, that is just. I mean, at this point, it looks like there's even no stopping them. Because every time you turn around, there's another one coming out. And not one is disappointed yet.
Not one that I can think of. You know, the head shrinkers, I love. The Samoans were phenomenal. You know, huge Rikishi fan, huge Yokozuna fan. The Rock, you can't say enough about. Umaga. I really liked Umaga. I think the packaging was a little off because they tried to package him like it was 1986 still. I think they did a much better job of packaging the Usos as a modern-day interpretation of that Samoan thing. But,
yeah. Yeah, he was more of like, they wanted to promote him as like some kind of savage.
Right, which the only didn't work when nobody else was being promoted like a character. And that's one of the things they do now. Every once in a while, they bring in a random character from the 80s that doesn't make sense because nobody else has a character like that. You know, we talked about Deuce and Domino earlier and Umaga and some of these guys, they come in. And even the Bullfighters, it came in and it just didn't make any sense in the current landscape. And it wasn't that these gimmicks were necessarily doomed to failure. It was that they were doomed to failure in the current market where nobody has these gimmicks. You know, take a look at, like, you know, guys today, you got Dolph Ziggler, who doesn't have a real character per se. He's got a personality, which is his character, whatever that might be. And your Kevin Owens is, you know, which are just shades of what's contemporary. They're not a very, it's not like the 80s where you had the British Bulldogs and the Coco Beware's Birdmans and stuff like that to where a character like that would survive.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, you know, I think it always comes back to these writers not, you know, they want to get away from certain things, not realizing that they literally have gold in front of them, but they don't want to dig there.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, I had them a lot higher on my list. Just because
well,
the families
I have higher
still going strong
are there for a reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're still going strong, and that's kind of why I had them higher. So, not a big deal. Well, you know, we were bound to butt heads at some point. So
that's all right.
Now my next family is a smaller one, but I thought that they were successful nonetheless, and that is the Poffo family.
You know, they were going to be my honorable mention pick this week. I was back and forth on including them because, and ultimately it came down to, I know absolutely nothing about their father, Angelo Poffo.
Angelo, okay.
You know, other than I've seen some clips of him on the, you know, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, those old DVDs. And just the fact that he raised two boys who were very proud to be, that he was their father.
Well, definitely. And the thing is, and that's what, it's funny, that the reason he didn't make your list was the reason he made my list. Because I had actually seen some Angelo Poffo stuff. And I will be honest with you, in the Missouri area, he was as big as you can get. He was the Von Erichs. The Poffos were the Von Erichs of the St. Louis, Missouri area.
Right.
You just didn't get much bigger than that. And that is kind of the reason they made my list. I always thought Lanny was so underrated, underutilized. And, of course, we know Randy was arguably one of the greatest wrestlers ever.
Agreed on both fronts. Leap and Lanny Poffo, to me, I mentioned him during our jobber show, definitely the most underrated talent of all time, possibly. I mean, we talked about him doing moonsaults in the 80s, like they were nothing, and nobody even connected. Like, oh, okay, he just did a flying backflip off the top rope. That was a huge deal. And, you know, the stuff he was doing was so far ahead of its time, and he never got credit for it. And, you know, and his stint as the genius was amazing because he became such a nasty, dastardly heel. And, you know, what more can be said about Randy Savage that hasn't been said? I saw someone in the mall tonight wearing a Macho Man Randy Savage t-shirt. Not kidding.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Not kidding. Somebody in the mall was wearing a Macho Man t-shirt. I mean, he's become a part of pop culture. You know, you do that, oh, yeah, everybody knows what you're talking about. And, you know, a great, great wrestling sibling said, you know, Randy's career trajectory was much higher than Lanny's, but Lanny has nothing to worry about. He had a better career than me. Yeah, but I didn't know a whole lot about Angelo Poffo other than what I'd seen about him. I knew he was a promoter as well. Yeah, so they were pretty much my honorable mention because there was some of the other families I think were a little deeper. And I was looking, for the most part, at depth of families, not necessarily a smaller. Like you said, this was a smaller pick. And I tended to go with bigger families.
And again, I understand, like I said, I wanted to put them in because, like I said, the father and them, what they achieved, it had to be seen to be believed. They were just phenomenal. And, you know, I just put up a match of them versus the Rock and Roll Express.
I actually watched that this afternoon when I was researching, yeah.
Why did Lanny have a sword?
Lanny was a wacky dude. Remember, he's the same guy who in the WWE did the Bunkhouse series wore a suit of armor.
I forgot about that. Well, we know where he got the sword.
Right. So I think it's the kind of thing that he was just for, you know, Renaissance. Maybe he was a big Ren Faire geek when no one was looking. He would put on a suit of armor and go walking around at the Ren Faires.
It's funny you mentioned that. And it's funny you mentioned it on this show. Because you know who's a second-generation wrestler but is also a Ren Faire guy?
No.
Timothy Zbyszko, Larry Zbyszko's son.
Really?
Yes, he – phenomenal worker. I honestly – I don't know why the WWE or TNA hasn't taken a look at him yet, but really, really good worker. But he's also, I guess he doubles as a Ren Faire guy with a sword fighter.
Sweet.
So it's just funny because it just fits into the whole show that we're doing, you know?
Right. He's second generation and he's going to battle even Lanny Poffo in a pseudo armor match. Which I would actually pay.
Maybe they're both going to go after Ricky Steamboat and slay him.
Da-da-da. Don't kill my daddy.
Slay the dragon. Ooh, speaking of second generations that had a short-lived career, boy, his son didn't last very long in wrestling, did he?
No, he did not. There was a lot of high hopes around him signing, and he just kind of fizzled quick.
Well, he was plagued with injuries. He basically is done, and I don't even think he's out of his 20s yet.
Yeah. Well, am I right in the thinking he was a concussion problem?
Yes, I actually worked a show with him.
And you gave him a concussion?
No. Yeah, he's only 28. And, he suffered a couple concussions.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm reading a statement from his father that it was actually his back that did him in.
Well, I mean, it's quite possible. You know, things happen. And he just got a bad break. And it would have been interesting to see what the son of the dragon, so to speak, would have done. And but we're never going to get that chance.
Yeah, the match I saw him in, very good work. Kid had his head on straight, very humble.
very well mannered. You could tell he was his father's son. I honestly could have seen him going to the top at some point, and it's just a shame, you know.
That his literally his career spanned from 2009 to 2013. So, all right, who's next on your list there, Patna?
Next on my list is a no-brainer as far as family goes. I made a vague reference to them earlier in that this family is very controversial in its dealings with itself. But, you know, it's many generational family, talking about the Hart family, dealing with Natalia and Tyson Kidd, even into the Davy Boy Smiths, and the first family of Canada. And for some reason, my computer's freezing, so I can't post my entry.
And don't forget,
but,
one of the Hart family is actually up. A member of the Totally Driven Family Network.
I don't know if we should hold that against him.
His show was actually on before ours today.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah, it was a good show. A little shout out to Smith Hart there. It was a good show tonight. Always very good interviews on that show. So if you get a chance, listen to it. That's the only show we're plugging.
Because he's got, like, a big name, and we're talking about his family on the show anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, the Hart family, to me, in the mid-90s, they became the WWF, Bret and Owen being the front and center of that. Of course, you get Jim the Anvil Neidhart, who was a brother-in-law of Davy Boy Smith, who was a brother-in-law. You really start to dip into a huge talent pool coming from Stu, the patriarch of the family. Now, the next generation is playing heavily still on WWE Tully with Natalya, being a big part of the women's division. Very interesting feud between Natalya and Charlotte, the second generation feud, so to speak, well, third generation in Natty's case. But you got Flair versus Hart, the next generation, so to speak. And, you know, of course, Davy Boy Smith Jr. and Tyson Kidd's married into that. And, you know, they've had their fair share of problems. It's the Owen tragedy, the infighting and the craziness, but their impact on the WWF and Stampede Canada Wrestling to start, the WWF and now the WWE continues to be a huge one.
Yeah. There's no even denying or arguing the impact the Harts have had over the years. And I mean, there were 7 boys alone, and I don't know how many girls, and I don't know how many grandchildren. At this rate, there should always be a Hart. As long as it's professional wrestling, there should be a Hart in it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, it's funny because, like, when you look at the Hart, the family itself, really, Owen and Bret are the only two that kind of broke out of that, you know, Canada mold.
Absolutely. They're the one most known to the American crowd. Up in Canada, there are a couple more were much more established and local, regional kind of guys. But two of them became big stars around the world.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, it was just interesting to me that because I always heard about the Hart family but didn't see much of them. And then when they brought in Owen, I was like, oh, we're going to get to see the rest of the Harts. And then we actually saw them on a pay-per-view, and we're like, oh, no, let's not see the rest of the Harts anymore.
You're talking about the one Survivor Series. But, you know, at that point,
yes,
most of them had been semi-retired. So it wasn't like they were all active in the ring and came down for the Survivor Series. You know, it was a great idea and, unfortunately, not the greatest execution. But they did play a big role in WWE TV. And, you know, Bret continues to be a legend around the world. Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things you don't really, you say the hearts and everybody goes, yep, you're right. You know, there's just not a whole lot of selling that. Although it is interesting to me that the feud between Natty and could you imagine how little interest there would be if the feud was, if she actually brought her father in to take on Charlotte and her father, and it was Jim the Anvil Neidhart against Ric Flair?
Oh, that's why it's Uncle Brett.
Right, that's why they went with Uncle Brett. I feel like he's a much bigger name. Dad, stay on the bench. I'm bringing Uncle Brett in.
Oh, that's horrible. Now, the next family on my list, again, you want to talk controversy, you probably don't get much more controversial than this. But to me, this was a family that had it all and didn't have it all. And, of course, I'm talking about the Kings of Texas, the Von Erichs. You know, everyone wants to remember, like, this great, huge wrestling family. But if you really look back on it, not all of them were that talented.
No, there's an argument to be made for three of them. you know, David, Kerry, and Kevin.
Yeah.
The rest of them, you know, didn't quite live up to the family expectations. A lot of people say that Kerry only got the role he was in because of David dying.
Because Kerry wasn't as, if you look back on some of his matches, he wasn't as great a worker as everyone wants to remember in their revisionist history.
Yeah, he was never the one who had the body and the quote unquote good looks and he had the charisma, but he didn't have the talent that a Kevin, who just outshined him in every sense of the word, had.
Yeah.
But Kevin was a string bean, and you know what I mean? He didn't have the charisma that Kerry had.
And David was kind of the total package, whereas David had the promos, had the wrestling ability. I always find, like, when people talk about the Von Erichs, it's always, you know, controversy followed them. You know, there was a time when they were the biggest story in Texas. And, you know, for them to run the area like they did, it tells you everything. I mean, they were literally royalty. When David Von Erich passed away, that was front page news. That was, a funeral procession that was held for presidents.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd really be, like, remiss not to look at them. But then at the same point, you wonder, you know, was the expectations what did in your Chris and your Mike?
Right. They just couldn't live up under it. There's definitely I always thought there was a lot more to that story than we're ever going to hear. And as they've passed away over the years and things, you know, you start to hear stories, and you can't always believe a lot of that either. Definitely something, whether it was internal or external, that really affected that family. And it became an American tragedy. And it's interesting to me that they were the quote-unquote first family of wrestling for a really long time, and when they started calling them the first family of wrestling, they kind of imploded, and all this crazy stuff happened to them, mm-hmm. all these tragedies and horrible things, and then in the 90s, the WWE started referring to the Harts as the first family of wrestling, and then shortly thereafter, it followed suit. You know, they started having all these internal tragedies and dramas and internal battles and craziness. So don't ever let anyone call you the first family of wrestling.
I don't think there's a chance to that. No confusion there, pal.
It's not a nickname you want.
Now, my take on it was, you know, Mike was off to a very good career, very good start. again, he wasn't as big as his brothers, but Michael did have talent. And then, of course, we know he went into the hospital for an injury, went into toxic shock syndrome, and basically they said he came out with a little bit of brain damage.
Right.
And he still tried to wrestle, but you could see – I was a huge follower of Texas wrestling, and you could definitely see he was off when he came back.
How did you get Texas wrestling?
It was on TV. World Class was
up
on
here?
Years. Yeah.
Up here?
Yeah. Plus, I had a tape connection. I had the late, great tape collector by the name of Greg Farrell. He could get you tapes from anywhere. And he used to make like these 8-hour VHS tapes for you of just show after show after show. That is how I used to get a lot of my fixes. But World Class, now, it was towards when World Class started airing. I remember the first show was the show where Gino Hernandez blinded Chris Adams.
Okay.
And then a few weeks later, Hernandez died, and I am trying to remember. And it was funny because it was not shown on cable. It was actually shown on, if I remember, it was 57 or 48 at the time, which was weird because, you know, again, like I said, it was Texas wrestling in Pennsylvania,
right. Right,
and I think this was the time that they were merging with Jerry Lawler in Memphis, and they were going to start touring around the country. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and getting back to the original, this is when Mike had come back from his injury, and you can definitely tell like something was off. He was, you know, a little slower, a little, and I just think that the pressure of being a Von Erich is what basically, you know, is what did him and Chris in.
It's quite possible. Like I said, we'll never really know what went down, but it certainly is, you know, not necessarily a coincidence that all this happened.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely more of the story than we'll ever know.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but I would have loved to have been around Texas during the heyday and during that, because I'll be honest, it looked like it was a blast and a half. So the Von Erichs were my next family.
All right.
So we're winding down, Chief. Who is at the top of your list?
Well, I really only had one choice for the top of the list. I mean, they are have been and continue to be the most influential family in wrestling. They're the biggest family in wrestling. And at this point, at this stage of the game, they all but own professional wrestling. And, of course, I'm talking about the McMahon family.
And you know what? you can't do any – I can't do anybody – at number one, but them also. So you're going to get no argument here. So
it was one of those.
One.
Yeah, and honestly, it was like last week we didn't put, you know, Moolah on the list because she was the clear winner. I was going to do the same thing with the McMahon family, but there was no list without the McMahon family. Honestly, so they had to be the list. You know, Vince McMahon Jr. took the WWF and turned it into a global phenomenon. Vince McMahon Sr. being the promoter of the Northeast Territory and was one of the ones who seceded from the NWA and started down the road. And now, of course, you look at Shane and Stephanie and all their contributions to the business on a not just behind the scenes as promoters, but when you look at Shane and and how he really revolutionized the internet in a lot of ways in the WWE when he took over and was in charge for a lot of years, WWE.com, and really made it. They don't get the credit, WWE gets the credit, for incorporating the internet and the World Wide Web in its infancy the way that the WWF did, to make it a very viable way of getting information out there, and they continue to do so with the network. And they've just changed the game in so many ways, some for the best, some for the worst. You know, us cranky old people long for the days of yesteryear, but you still can't deny the influence the McMahons have had.
No, you can't. And like, and you just hit the nail on the head. They're still changing the game. I mean, the WWE Network is a total game changer. And, you know, just when you think that the McMahons are done or they played out, they come up with something different, man. And you really can't deny the success of Vince McMahon. I mean, he made himself the only game in town. You know, there is no number two. That tells you everything you need to know. The fact that he is his own competition cracks me
right
up.
Yeah. At this point, NXT is much more well known than your Ring of Honors or your TNAs or, you know, anything like that. The number two promotion in the world essentially is NXT.
Exactly. It's almost like, hey, I own the New York Yankees and the New York Mets.
Right.
You know, and again, this was all McMahon building it, McMahon having visions, McMahon sticking with his game. But that's one thing people don't give him enough credit for. He sticks to his game plans and to his guns. Like, one of McMahon's always – rules of thumb was he never acknowledged the competition. And everyone said, oh, but they're ripping on you. They're doing this and that. Man, never would mention anybody else. And to this day, Eric Bischoff still says that that was the worst mistake he ever made, was challenging Vince McMahon to a fight, because he literally made everyone turn to WWE. McMahon knew it, and McMahon didn't even say boo about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got to give him credit, because he's never strayed from his formulas. You know, he does, whether you like it or not, but you can't argue with their success.
No, I mean, absolutely. There's the only game in town, and people like to rag on them, but the reality is, you know, there's nothing even close to what they bring to the table. And then, you know, look at Steph with Triple H. He's a big, big factor in why NXT is a success. You know, he's married into the family. He's not a McMahon per se, but I bet you love to change his name to McMahon. You know, he's responsible for a lot of the success that's come out of NXT.
Yeah, yeah, and he's, you know, he's building, you know, the next generation. And like you said, you know, people can sit there and, you know, they may not like the way he does business, they may not like this and that, but you can't argue, again, with the success. These guys are basically becoming their own competition, and that's, you know, that's a nice problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially that was the thing for years and years and years. They realized that there was a problem. They had drained all the territories. WCW was gone, and they ran into this lull of what can we do to build stars? It's so tough to build stars, and they were having issues building stars. And then, you know, they had the developmental territories, and over the years, forever, as a breeding ground, and it just wasn't working out the way they liked, so they reinvented the territory system into the NXT system and, you know, changed the game of how they built stars. They built their own. You know, it's just
a
constant way of you know, reinvigorating themselves and doing things, keeping up front. I think it's going to keep the McMahon family front and center in wrestling for probably the rest of our lives.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. They're not going anywhere, and no one is knocking them off their pedestal. So, to me, you know, like you said, they're pretty much the be all and end all at this point. So, but you know, partner, that's I just thought of you know who we missed on both of our list, and I don't know if you had him as an honorable mention. The Guerreros.
You know, I looked at the Guerreros, and really, Gory was a huge star in Mexico. Eddie was a big star here. The rest of them, you know, Chavo, they were decent, but I don't think they had enough for me to, or at least enough that I connected with to be on my list. They were a consideration,
okay,
but they weren't. They weren't outside of Eddie, really. You know, and I'm not knocking the family as a whole, the wrestling family, proud wrestling family, especially Gory in that case. But to me, they didn't sway my vote as much as the other ones.
Now, did Chavo's kidnapping have anything to do with that?
It's actually what I remember Chavo for the most.
I could not make the pay-per-view because I was kidnapped. Still the greatest excuse for not showing up for work ever.
It tops "my horse is sick" as my favorite all-time wrestling excuse.
Yeah. I still to this day think that was the greatest thing ever. He was kidnapped and couldn't make it. His poor kid was probably sitting there like, "Oh, Dad, how could you do this to me?" Well, partner, I think we are at that time. You know, it's an hour and a half in, and we pretty much touched on a lot of different stuff tonight. Gave people a lot of things to think about, you know. When it comes to families and wrestling, good, bad, ugly, you know, there's it's a rich history, man, and there's a lot more we haven't touched on, and the more you look at it, I guarantee at some point, you know, you're going to find out that certain people are related to people that you didn't think, and, you know, this is probably a subject we can touch maybe later on down the line. Maybe we could touch on wrestling's worst families. That's worst siblings ever.
It's like every week you're like, "Let's do awful stuff." Like, man, that's not. You just want to troll. Like, what are we going to do this week? Let's pick the worst ever thing that's happened in the world. No. We're not doing that.
Well, on that note, we're gonna wrap it up. I'd like to thank everyone for listening in. Tune in next week when we'll have another retro wrestling subject. So as we go, partner, you want to give our usual snappy goodbye?
Snappy goodbye. Happy trails, folks.
All right, have a good one, all.
Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Mondays, we have the always relevant and often hilarious Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. That's at 6 p.m. And at 11 p.m., go 8 flights up and get your mind right. Tuesdays at noon, Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira covers professional wrestling news, rumors, and one-of-a-kind interviews with professional wrestling performers and insiders. At 8 p.m., join Smith Hart of the legendary Hart Family Dynasty for the Hart Grapevine as he goes behind the scenes and shares his knowledge of the professional wrestling industry and some
truly remarkable special interviews, too. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesdays, 9:30 a.m., the Coco and Wee Wee Show asks the age-old question, who do you love, who do you shove? And at 8 p.m., the Give No F's Cosplay Variety Hour brings you the best in cosplay, comics, video games, and more. Thursday nights at 5 p.m.,